Hello and welcome to the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michaela, and I open you the doors to software companies and thought leaders around the world. Today, I speak with Cassidy Williams about how it is to work remotely for CodePen, porting and actively used software from one technology to another, how and why she brings humor into tech, and how she handles all her side projects. I'm super thrilled for this awesome first episode. I hope you enjoy it. If you like it, support my work by spreading the word. Tell your friends about this podcast, share it on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. I promise you, I will do a happy dance each time you do it. Today I have the pleasure to be talking to Cassidy Williams. She's a senior software engineer at CodePen. Cassidy is a super interesting person. She's not only a developer, but she's also a little bit of a comedian. Her jokes on Twitter really make me laugh. But overall, Cassidy and her achievements are really impressive. She worked for Amazon, L4 Digital, Venmo, Microsoft, and many more. And if that's not enough, she has quite a few side projects, and in her free time, she builds hardware keyboards. Well, Cassidy also works for a really interesting company, CodePen. CodePen is one of the largest communities for designers and developers. It's actually a social development environment where you can showcase your front-end code. So there's plenty to talk about today. Thank you, Cassie, for being on my show.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Cassidy, so you live in Seattle. It's actually a city that gives you access to a lot of high-tech and top-notch companies. Why did you choose to work for CodePen? And also, why did you choose to work remote?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I originally moved to Seattle from New York City. I was living there for a while and decided to go for a change of pace. And so that's how I ended up here out west. And I really liked my time over at L4 Digital. That's where I first worked when I moved to Seattle. And then unfortunately it was bought and L4 Digital is no more. So it was fun working there while that lasted. And then I hopped over to Amazon after that. And Amazon was a great learning experience, but it was also, I learned both what I liked and didn't like. And I really learned that I was not a huge fan of very large companies. And so that's why I ended up leaving Amazon and switching over to CodePen. And CodePen is kind of like the opposite of Amazon, really. It's an incredibly small company. We're only 8 people. And I would be working remotely instead of working from an office. And I always thought it would be fun to be able to work remotely because I would be able to have just the flexibility of working from anywhere, whether it be from my own house or in a library, in a cafe, or even a co-working space if I went for that. And yeah, it's just been awesome so far. I've been really happy working at CodePen. I've been working on this product that I've been using CodePen for years. And the fact that I get to actually work on it now and build things that I would actually use myself as a developer is really exciting. And yeah, that's kind of how I ended up at CodePen.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. So you're working for CodePen remotely. Is everybody on the team remote?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so technically, two of the people we call Bend, Oregon, our global headquarters, kind of as a joke, because two people live there. Okay. They rent a co-working space together. But besides that, the rest of us all mostly work from home, from our respective homes. And it's kind of fun because the designer, Claire, at CodePen, she lives in Seattle as well. And one of the co-founders at CodePen, he's moving out to Seattle too. So we've got a nice little contingent here in Seattle. But yes, it's a fully remote company.
And so do you think, or do you miss sometimes to be with your coworkers, to hang out over the water cooler or next to the water cooler and just talk?
Yeah, we actually have a meeting on occasion that we call just water cooler time, where we just chat and hang out with each other on the video chat, which is fun. Sometimes I do miss being able to gab with people, but not as much as I thought I would. It's been really nice because I can kind of do work at my own pace and move around wherever I need to. I have an office in my home, and that's kind of where I try to stick and do all of my work. And then when I leave the office, I'm done working for the day. So I can kind of have that separation. And what's kind of nice about it is because I'm not talking with coworkers all day and kind of gabbing over the water cooler or distracting people with jokes or something, Because I'm not doing any of that during the day, I have a lot more energy to do that in the evenings. And so I've been just hanging out more with friends and at meetups and doing a lot more outside of work without being exhausted at the end of the day. I'm much more motivated to be social and to hang out with people after work, which I see that as a plus, because there were definitely times in my life where I would really want to hang out with people and I would do it, but then I would just be so exhausted at the end of the day from all of just the interaction and stuff. And I'm a pretty introverted person. And so it's nice being able to work from home to have that separation. And I can go be social if I want to by going to a library or cafe. And if I kind of just want to be on my own and get the work done, I can do that at home.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I really like the quiet time at home. You can be so productive working remotely. And then if you are in your work modus, you're in your work modus, right? You're in the flow and mm-hmm. you're doing what you need to do. And then you have a social time or interactive time at different times. Yeah. So Codepen is a relatively small company with 8 people. So I imagine that you have a lot of ownership and a lot of responsibility. Do you feel that you have a lot of impact by the work that you do? And what exactly is your responsibility at that company?
Yeah. And so it's because it's small, you really kind of wear a lot of hats and you really have to know what you're doing and own that section of the product. A big part of my responsibility is actually converting the site over to React. Codepen was originally built with Ruby on Rails and jQuery way back in 2012. And it was a great technology for its time. But at this point now, it's kind of outdated. And so we've been slowly but surely migrating more and more of the site over to React. And yeah, it's mostly been converting the site to React. We've been adding a lot of GraphQL and Apollo to the code base and moving away from just other state management stuff. Again, the site is kind of in a hodgepodge where, again, it was originally built in Ruby on Rails and jQuery, and then Codepen started to introduce React into the code base in 2016, I think. And that's when they launched both the projects editor, the Codepen projects editor, where it's much more advanced projects rather than just HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and multi-files and stuff, and also the dashboard. And those were built with React and Redux. And around that time, that's when Redux was really having its heyday. And Redux is definitely still relevant now, but it's not a technology that I've ever really enjoyed. I'm sorry to all of those who love Redux. It's not my cup of tea, but it's still pretty popular. But we've decided that we're moving away from Redux and moving into GraphQL and Apollo for state management and also just for getting API data and everything. And it's been awesome because it really empowers the front end to get exactly the data that it needs and to make the right calls and be really modular about it. And also just gives us a really good interface for making really extensible and cool components. And it's a really awesome technology in general. Like there's a lot less configuration, and if you want to edit a component, you don't have to jump around between reducers and actions and that sort of thing. It's just all in that one component, which is pretty fun. But anyway, that was a very long-winded way to say I do a lot of things at Codepen, but it's mostly the engineering side of things and mostly front end, but dabble in back end a little bit too.
Yeah, so I actually watched a talk that you gave recently about this whole transition phase at Codepen that you worked your way through from starting with Rails and then JavaScript and, as you said, Redux, and now you're actually using mm-hmm. Apollo and GraphQL. So for a relatively new company, that's a lot of change, a lot of technology change.
Yeah.
And as you said, I mean, you're making the change slowly. So in your talk, I saw that parts of it are actually still in Rails, part of it are, you know, in React, parts of it are now in Apollo or something like that. So how do you handle that all? When you interviewed, what was the tech stack that you actually said, I'm comfortable with that? Or what was the interview experience and what did you want from you to demonstrate your skills?
So my interview experience, this is kind of a funny story. I actually interviewed with Codepen before I joined Amazon. And again, Amazon was a great learning experience, and it was a company that I really decided it just wasn't a good fit for me. And there are some good teams there, some bad teams there. Unfortunately, I was on a team that was a little bit of both. But anyway, I interviewed with CodePen at the beginning of 2018. Is that right? Yeah. Wow. Time flies. I interviewed with CodePen at the beginning of 2018, ended up going to Amazon. And then about 6 or 7 months into Amazon, I reached back out to CodePen and I said, "Hey guys, can I re-interview with you again?" And that's kind of how I ended up getting to CodePen there. And so when I was initially interviewing with CodePen, they were still very all in on Redux. And so my interview, it was technical and also non-technical in that they were asking me what I was familiar with. They were asking about my side projects. They were asking what I was comfortable with. And then they gave me a coding assignment. And the coding assignment was to just implement part of their site in React and Redux. And it was a fun interview because I was able to kind of mess with code. Like they gave me access to part of a repository to mess with. Which was really cool and trusting of them. And I thought that was a really good culture indicator. But yeah, I was using React and Redux on there. And then by the time I actually joined later in August, they were just like, "Yeah, we're not using Redux anymore." And I was so happy. It was awesome. But that's kind of how the interview went. They were asking what I was comfortable with, what I could build. And then when I actually did build it, then they went over the code with me and I would talk about, here's how I implemented it, these are the decisions I made, and that sort of thing.
So even though you didn't really, or you aren't a fan of Redux and React, you were familiar with those concepts, or did you learn to, you know, because you wanted the job at the CodePen and you knew that that's what it takes, so you learned actually what you have to do and you interviewed there?
Yeah, so I already knew the technologies because I'd used them at previous jobs. And don't get me wrong, I love React. I'm just not a Redux fan. And so I was aware of the technologies and I had used them on different client projects and across different side projects and applications. I was experienced with it. And I was, if I had to do it, I was going to do it. But man, when I got to CodePen and they said, "We're not doing it, we're doing this other technology instead." You were super happy. I was so happy. Oh, I was very, very pleased that we got to do something else, because I didn't find Redux to be very intuitive, and that might just be how how my brain thinks, and other people, I'm sure that they think that something like Apollo and GraphQL is not intuitive at all, and Redux is the way to go, and that's kind of just how the world works and how brains work. But I was so pleased when I learned that I didn't have to do Redux at this gig, that I was able to pick up a brand new technology and really learn it a lot and dive in deep. And the entire team was kind of learning Apollo and GraphQL when I started too. And the first project that I worked on was actually the company's first project working with Apollo and GraphQL.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, we were all learning together, and it was great too, because we were able to say, okay, we've had this experience, we're in, and just went from there and ran with it.
Yeah, I can imagine that if you're starting at a company and you all have the same goal of learning that technology, it really is also a bonding time, right? You can help each other out quite a lot, and you're somehow starting at the same level, which is really nice as well, right? So everybody is sort of unfamiliar with that and in a new territory. And yeah, I think it can be a very interesting experience to get to know your teammates and the company as well.
Yeah. And we try to do a lot of pair programming where we have a video chat going and we'll work on the same code base and commit something and then say, okay, now it's your turn to code this, and talk through the code. And so being able to learn together and code together and build together has been really fun and a solid learning experience for all of us.
Coming back to the bonding experience, as a remote company, do you sometimes get together in one place and, you know, just have face-to-face meetings or just have quality time with each other?
Yeah, we've gotten together as a team twice since I've joined. And I do think that that's kind of unusual for CodePen to do it so much within a year period, because I'm going to be at CodePen for a year this month, actually, which is kind of fun. But when I first joined, it was very good timing, because that's when they were doing their first like big company I shouldn't say offsite because it's not like we're ever onsite. So I guess our big company onsite together, and the entire team was getting together to talk about just the future of CodePen, things that we want to build and technologies we want to use. And literally that week I joined was when they were doing this company gathering. And so it was great timing. And then later we had another company get together that was significantly more casual because one of our teammates was getting married. And so we all flew out for the wedding and we were able to get together and see each other in person, just in a much more social setting there.
Yeah, that sounds like a good opportunity to bond and to be together, right? And enjoy some time together. So what I also saw on your team side was actually that there's a quite high ratio. I think it's half-half, right?
Of 50 women in men and women.
Yeah. Do you feel, I mean, you have worked at other places where I think Amazon and all of those companies don't have those ratios. Do you feel that it's different? Do you see that it makes it different?
It's awesome. It's something that the different companies I've worked for, some have had better diversity than others, but what's great about CodePen is everybody just really respects each other. And then if they don't like something, they're very willing to call it out. And it's a very solid culture in that regard. And one of the other female devs, Rach Smith, she is based in Australia and she is an amazing engineer. And I would venture to say probably the best engineer at the company, or if not among the best, we all know what we're doing. But what's great about that and what I saw was when I first joined the company, she had recently had a baby and she was kind of working part-time because she, you know, had a baby. And she was like feeding her kid breakfast, like spoon feeding him food while also talking about advanced technical topics on the video chat. And it was the most amazing thing because I was just like, man, she's able to balance all of that. And everybody is totally cool with it. And nobody ever questions it because she's a good engineer. And it was something that really kind of threw me through a loop in a good way. I hadn't really seen that sort of thing before, where people generally respect you in general if when you're a woman in tech. But there are plenty of experiences that I would say almost every woman has had in this industry that has not been great. And the fact that I haven't had any of that at all at CodePen has been amazing. And I do think that it is because we have that ratio and the founders are really good at just saying it's good to have people around who aren't like us, because then we can get a solid perspective on certain concepts that we just don't have, because people aren't all just a homogenous group, the exact same type of people, both geographically and gender-wise and also ethnicity-wise too. And it's also good just for learning from each other too. We've had meetings recently where some of the guys were asking questions where they were perfectly valid questions, but they wouldn't have ever had the answer to those questions if they didn't have so many women on the team to be able to explain their experiences in terms of social media and that sort of thing. And so it's really cool having a team that is so equal in general and very inclusive. And I've been really happy to work at a place that is so inclusive and so open to talk about all sorts of issues and good and bad things.
Yeah, that sounds like a really wonderful environment to be working in. I also think that if you experience, like, for example, that a woman, you know, can do both at the same time, I mean, spoon feeding a kid and still, you know, talk about tech, it's a no-brainer. Obviously, you can do that, right? But if you haven't seen it before, somehow people are starting to question that, right? And it's like, is that even possible? Can you concentrate? Well, yeah, we're doing, even though multitasking isn't the best thing to do, spoon feeding and talking about tech is possible, you know? It's like driving the car and talking is possible, right? So
exactly, and that's just how life works, and it's awesome that they're so open to that. And I do think that companies in general are being more and more open to that sort of thing, but being able to actually see it firsthand has been a really cool experience for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. So one of the things that I really like from your profile as well, or from what you show publicly to others, is all the jokes that you do, right? So sometimes I'm really cracking about what you put on Twitter. And personally, I think that that's also a way of making tech a more welcoming place. So for me, when I see that, it's somehow lowering the barrier. It's like, it's not everything is so serious. You know, we can laugh about it, about ourselves, about failures, you know, maybe also about daily life things. Is that one of the reasons why you're doing that? Why you're making those jokes? Why do you spend time on making videos, for example? And, you know, what's your point behind that?
Honestly, I really like jokes. And anyone who's subscribed to my newsletter, which, by the way, I have a newsletter, subscribe. I've been doing that newsletter for like 2.5 years now. And every single week, I make sure I put a joke into it. And I've always just been a really big fan of jokes and humor and stuff. And the fact that I can make people laugh and kind of have that just lower barrier to entry, because they're just like, oh, wow, this person who is an engineer also has the same issues that I have and can laugh about it. Like it does kind of make it a lighter and more fun experience. And ever since I started making videos, I kind of started doing it as a joke, and I was just like, eh, it'd be funny if I made this. I'll try it a few weeks ago. And then I realized people enjoy the content. And I was just like, well, you know what? If I can put some smiles on people's faces, I might as well keep going. And, I've gotten several emails and private messages and even just replies on Twitter where people are saying, hey, I just wanted to let you know my younger brother has been learning how to code, and he was getting really discouraged because he was having a hard time with it. But then he saw your video and saw that you had a hard time with this too, but you could laugh at it. And now he's just so much more motivated. And people saying, oh, you've really made my tough day so much better. Or I just had this issue yesterday, and so it was a really relevant joke. I was able to laugh about it with my team, and now we're kind of more motivated to do this sort of thing. Just those kinds of messages really make my day, and I want to be able to bring that kind of lightness and humor to development, because it is a very serious concept sometimes. It's a very logical and dry thing to code at times when you're not being creative and making something fun. A lot of times it's just like, okay, how do I solve this problem that's basically a math problem, but I have to apply it to code and make a computer do it? If you do that all the time, some people thrive just kind of looking down at their keyboard, coding, and then that's all they do. But for myself, I know that I appreciate being able to laugh at myself and laugh at the issues that I continuously have. There have been so many times where I'll be on Stack Overflow and I'll realize the question I'm looking up is a question I asked 2 years ago, and little things like that. It's a career that's worth laughing, maybe not laughing at, but laughing with, because we're all going through such similar experiences. So being able to make jokes to kind of make someone's careers or days or even just a couple minutes just that much better, it's a privilege to be able to do. The fact that people are very open to that in this community is awesome, because I can keep doing it and have a ball on my own and bring happiness to others too.
Yeah, I think humor is a really powerful thing, and it's also a really nice way of connecting with each other, connecting with, well, the human side of each other, or with failure, with fears as well, right? You can discuss that somehow in a not so serious way, in a not so deep way, right? You can consume it easier, and, you know, you're not opening, you know, a can of worms, but you're just slightly talking about it in a more digestible way, I would say. At least that's how I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Yeah, you said it can be sometimes a little bit of a dry topic as well. So when you're at your computer and you're coding and you're at a problem and you're facing that problem and you don't know how to overcome it, what would be your first strategy be to look that up? Are you Googling it? Are you searching on the web for it? Or what's your approach here?
Yeah. So when I first see something, I do definitely try to just make it myself. And if I can't do that, I'll see if someone else has run into it. And so I'll Google it. I'll check on Stack Overflow, that sort of thing. So when I have finished Googling and I don't have any success with that, I have a notebook or something next to me. I always have some kind of pencil or pen and paper next to me, and I start drawing out the problem. And like right next to me right now, I'm looking at it. I have a little note where it's just like, okay, here's how I architect it. And it's just a little architecture diagram. And then I kind of try to go with that. And then if that doesn't go well, that's when I just start asking questions. And so I'll reach out to my teammates, and if they can't help me, or if they pair with me and also can't figure it out, I'll start asking the internet. I'll start asking my own questions on Stack Overflow. And that's my general approach. I do try to, do things myself as much as I can, but I kind of have a general rule where if I spend X amount of minutes on a problem and I still can't solve it, that's when I just have to start consulting others, whether it be the internet or teammates, because it's very easy to have that pride and be just like, no, I should be able to solve this. I will solve this. And then you don't solve it. And then that's when it starts to get particularly discouraging. And yeah. So being willing and open to ask those questions and to acknowledge that you don't know how to solve a problem, I think is very important. And that's something that honestly, it's been a learning experience. When I first started in my career, I was not good at asking questions, and I can openly admit that now. But then I was much more like, I have to be able to do this. I have to be perfect. I need to be able to know that I know what I'm doing. But now I'm incredibly quick to say, hey, Rach, or hey, Chris, I have no idea how to code this thing, but here's what I've tried. What mm-hmm. do I do? And then they could say, oh, you just forgot this. And then I can keep going on with my life. And it's great because I have that direction. And I think were I to give advice to some junior engineer who's just starting out, I would say, man, just ask your questions soon, because as soon as you get those questions answered, you can move on with your life rather than just banging your head against a problem and taking a lot longer to solve it because you didn't ask those questions.
Yeah, and you're learning, right? When you're exactly. getting the answer, you're learning, and also you're bonding somehow with your teammates. So mm-hmm. because it's a remote company, how do you reach out to your colleagues? Do you have like tools that you use at CodeBan to talk to each other, or would you old school pick up the phone and call them?
No, we're not that old school. So we use Slack for pretty much everything, and you're kind of expected to be on Slack when you're online for the day. And if someone is not on Slack after a certain amount of time, you just kind of consult another team member. And we try to make it so not everybody is so siloed where that there's only one person that can answer a particular question. We kind of try to share the knowledge mm-hmm. and share the wealth of knowledge around each other a lot. And so you can always ask someone else or have someone else ping you. And we also use Notion for almost everything. Notion is a really great tool for note-taking, for building wikis, for building spreadsheets and documents and calendars and a bunch of other things. And CodePen is pretty much run within Notion. We do all of our all-hands documents in there, all of company announcements are in there, and onboarding and stuff, but also project planning, Kanban boards, sprint planning, project planning, product planning. All of our documents are in Notion, and mm-hmm. you can mention a team member in Notion that way. And so I'll often mention someone in a ticket, and then if they don't get to it relatively quickly, that's when I ping them on Slack. And then almost always they get back to you on Slack relatively quickly. And we always try to have kind of a variety of tasks going, so you're never fully blocked, because when you're remote, especially if you're on different time zones or something, you're never really sure when someone will be online outside of their normal hours, or if they're saying, oh, well, I have a doctor's appointment today, but then I'm going to be on later, that sort of thing. And so it's always good to, on a remote team, have multiple tasks that you can be working on. And so if you end up getting blocked on one, you can work on the other until someone else is back. And we've handled it pretty well. I don't think I've ever been at a point where I'm just like, I can do zero work and I'm just sitting here for an extended mm-hmm. period of time. There's always something to do. We've been able to manage that pretty well. Mostly Slack and Notion have been our main communication devices.
So you said you're sharing knowledge so several people can work on the same thing. When you're mm-hmm. saying sharing knowledge, one of the things that comes to my mind is code reviews. Do you use code reviews at CodeBan? Do you do code reviews?
We do, yes. And so, and that's something that's relatively new to CodePen. Like, it was something that we, honestly, they might have started it around the time that I started at the company, but they used to be just like, we trust you. If you write code, just push it. But now we're a little bit more cautious in that regard, and we actually do the code reviews now. And so we use GitLab internally and write our code, we push it, and it's on a branch, and we make a merge request or a pull request, and then it's down to just people to look through the code and approve it. And we kind of make it where you have a list of approvers, and as long as someone on the list has approved it, that means they've code reviewed it and they're confident that you did it right, and then that's when you can merge it. And that's generally our rule of thumb, where if an approver approves it, then that means this other engineer or even designers or whoever has looked through it, is happy with it, and has set it to merge. So yeah, we're pretty new at code reviews, but we're decent at them, where we will never push code just because we want to push code. We'll make sure that the team is aware of what you're pushing.
And do you see benefits of using code reviews at CodePen already?
Oh, definitely. I think code reviews have really prevented a lot of different bugs where we wouldn't have even realized there were bugs unless someone else was looking at it. So yeah, code reviews definitely help with that. And we've also been working more and more on just testing in general. We have unit tests, which go through mostly our utility functions and specific components that kind of have one function in general, and we make sure those work individually. And we also use Cypress for integration testing, and that will say, okay, go to this page, does the header render great, does the sidebar render great, does this or that render, does this value do this when you click on that, that sort of thing. And so we've been implementing testing a lot more, and between all of the testing and then continuously running those tests whenever we push to GitLab and then doing code reviews, those checks in place have really helped us just push less bugs and ultimately just be better at engineering what we want to build.
Mm-hmm. And who makes those decisions to, for example, have now code reviews or, you know, double down on tests and things like that, or even which technology choices you're going to make? Is that a team decision, or is that something that's more really from the founders of the company? How is that decided?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And it kind of depends on the thing. Typically, it's a team decision. For example, we were looking into, I forget what library recently, we were looking into some library recently, and one teammate was very for it and another teammate was not. And so someone else was like, okay, I'll experiment with it and then I'll report my results. And then after experimenting with it, they're like, yeah, we're not using this library at CodePen. And that was that. And so we were pretty good about having those kinds of team discussions and making it so we all have input on that. It's not just the founders making those decisions, which has been really nice to see and be able to have that level of trust with each other. And I think in terms of product direction, that's more on the founders, where they'll say, okay, these are the general things that we want to be at or the general things we want to build by the end of the year. And then in terms of timing and figuring that sort of thing out, that's when it starts to be a whole team situation. Mm-hmm. And we relatively recently started a new project planning process, where before it was a little bit more ad hoc, but we're trying to be a little bit more methodical about it, where if someone wants to work on a project or if two people want to work on a project, we have a doc that we write, and it's not super long. I coming from Amazon, at Amazon, they are very into documentation, and they'll say, okay, if you want to build this, write a 6-page document explaining why. We're not so much like that, but we'll say, okay, here's what I want to build. Here's the business reasons why. Here's the dev reasons why. Here's why I think we should. And let's discuss it. And then we'll have just a mini team meeting about it and discuss what we want to build and what we don't want to build. And that comes from the team. That can come from the founders. But in general, we're pretty good about working on everything as a team and being able to say, okay, this is what I want, this is what I don't want, and that sort of thing.
So at CodePen, you have several hundred thousands of users, and mm-hmm. I guess you try to align the features that you build with the user base that you have, and then also to, well, make it attractive for new users as well to hop onto your platform. What are the steps that you would do to understand whether or not a feature is actually worth your time, and how do you get these inspirations? Is that part of your job as well? Or, as you said, is it really something that the founders will think about, and is it their responsibility?
It's not, let me think. That's kind of a founder thing. One of our teammates, Marie, she's the head support person at CodePen, and she does a lot of like data science and research on the side, in addition to her regular support of answering emails and making sure users are dealing with bugs properly and then doing bug reporting for us. She wears a lot of different hats. But what she'll do is, for example, the founders will say, hey, we want to know generally, why do pro subscribers stop subscribing, let's just say. And she will do the work of talking to people who have deleted their accounts or unsubscribed. She's a queen of spreadsheets and has built the most complex formulas ever in these spreadsheets to be able to say, okay, this is the general reason why, these are the general sentiments around this new feature, this is how users are perceiving this or that, this is what people generally want, that sort of thing. And she's really good at documenting that and everything. And so I would say, even though the founders kind of make the decisions about where the product is going, I'd say Marie and then other team members, but definitely Marie, do a lot of the work of figuring out what the return on the investment would be and what users like and don't like and that sort of thing.
And do you do something like A/B testing as well? So do you have like some hooks within your product that you can see, you know, where they are clicking, what they are doing, how they are using your product that you have?
We've done certain kinds of that. We haven't been very active about like tracking clicks and everything. We started using some technologies for it that worked decently, but weren't a good fit. And so I feel like if the perfect technology came around, we would be doing that a lot more. That being said, if we do want to track a certain feature, we do have some tools that we use internally, and I honestly don't remember all of the names of them, but our lead design person, she is also really awesome at just user research and user experience. She's doing a lot of research and stuff on the side outside of work too. So she's really good at that sort of thing. And so when she is trying to decide between a couple different designs, she will work on that and then actually interview people and see, okay, what do you like about this? What don't you like about this? Watch them interact with the site with certain changes implemented. And she makes decisions based on that. And then we as engineers kind of take her designs and run with it and make them come to life a little bit more.
Yeah. So one of the things that you talked about was these changes that you're actually making on a technological side. So as we discussed, you're moving away from Rails and from Redux to this Apollo GraphQL setup. And right now you're working with all of those different technologies. How does that feel? And what's your plan there to really convert the product into a more consolidated state?
That's a good question. There's a lot of different plans and everything, but luckily it's been going pretty well, mostly because the site's already implemented. Whenever we make major changes, those are kind of separate from conversion projects. And so we have projects that are more just convert this chunk to React, but then we also have convert this chunk to React and add this feature to it or something like that. And we try to make it so each of these little projects kind of build up to setting up the site for success for another project down the line. And so we have kind of a mini timeline going at all times of what projects will be going on next. And so one of the things, for example, that we implemented recently in React was the homepage. The homepage was very, very Ruby on Rails driven. And if you saw my talk that you mentioned, you saw that. And what's great is that talk, even though I gave it only a couple months ago, it is out of date now because the homepage is now completely in React now. And what was exciting about building it in React is once that was done, we had a new grid system for showing items like pens and projects and posts and that sort of thing. We built a new grid system for that in doing that with the homepage, and we were able to then take that to the explore pages, where if you wanted to explore popular pens or pens from people that you follow or posts that are picked by the team, those pages were the next chunk that we implemented in React. And what was great about that is we were able to pull in the grids from the homepage and use those as generic components in the explore pages. And then as we were doing the explore pages, we were able to say, okay, let's actually start moving away from Ruby on Rails routing and move into React routing. And we started with Reach Router, and then because of that project, we were able to determine, okay, this was cool, but we're going to move over to React Router because there's a lot of hooks and stuff coming to React Router that we were excited to use. And so we were able to convert a lot of that with that project, and that led us to be able to convert another chunk of the site to using both React Router and the grids. And anyway, all this being said, we were able to use all these different technologies that we've been building to implement the site in React faster and faster and bigger and better. And right now the part of the site that I'm working on, it is using all of those different little projects to enhance the current one that I'm using. And it's been fun. It's been interesting. And I think a lot of users aren't even realizing the benefits that they're getting from all of this conversion. The site is significantly faster than it used to be, and it's only going to get faster. We're kind of slowly but surely moving to a more SPA, single page application type of experience. And it's only going to get better from here on out. And there's a lot of really cool things in the pipeline that I probably shouldn't talk about before we get closer to actually building them. But I'm really excited for where CodePen is going. It just in the next few months, if not the next few years. And there's a lot in the pipeline, and so keep an eye out.
Yeah. So what I get from what you explained right now is that you moved actually to those new technologies because it allows you to build the site in a much more modular way, but also to increase the speed of the web application and to have a better and more, well, a more modern user experience where you have this single page application where just parts of the site can refresh themselves, right? Instead of having to refresh the whole site. Right. Is that the main motivation for those technology changes at CodePen?
No, I mean, it's a really large bonus. Really, a lot of the site is we're working to make it, because like you said, it's becoming more modular. We're trying to make things so much more modular that when a lot of the new features that are coming soon that I can't talk about, when a lot of those features start showing up, they will be significantly easier to implement. The way the site was built a year ago, so much of it was in Ruby on Rails and jQuery that a lot of the modern things that we want to do and a lot of the new features and aspects of the site that we want to build just honestly weren't really possible. Like, we could do it, but it would take a lot of work, and then maintaining it would be a pain to work on. And so in doing all of these things, we're kind of setting the stage for a lot more new features to come. In addition to the speed and the better developer experience, it's going to be a lot better for users because more new features and more exciting things are going to be able to come more often, a lot faster, and just overall, it'll be a much better experience.
Yeah, sounds very exciting.
Yeah.
I recently read an article about how Slack actually modernized their UI, and they also did it piece by piece, where they just replaced, you know, the old UI with pieces of the new UI. And I found it really interesting because it's somehow tackling the problem of should you rewrite your code, right? Should you rewrite from scratch, right? And how you're going to approach that. And so when I saw your talk and how you actually approach it with CodePen, it really reminded me on how Slack rewrote their UI just to modernize that and give a better user experience.
Yeah, it's good to do it. It's good to do it piece by piece, because otherwise it'll just take too long. If you do it piece by piece, then especially if you make like small styling changes and stuff, that can be progressive, and then users aren't just like, whoa, everything's different. I hate it. We can do little things that make it slowly, slightly different, while also changing the technologies and so making the site look better, feel better, and then also under the hood just work a lot better too.
Yeah. And I, as you said, I think that some of the changes are maybe non-functional, so it's harder for users to really understand what's going on. And so if they have gradually smaller changes and smaller adjustment, that they can also feel that it's better, right? They have this feeling of it's there's a progression, you know, and there are good things to come.
Right.
So maybe one of the last things I wanted to talk with you before we are ending is your side projects and how you handle that. I saw that, well, you did a lot of hackathons, for example. Then you have, well, you have your jokes on Twitter that probably take also quite a chunk of your time.
Less time than people think.
Yeah, it comes naturally, right?
Yeah, I'm hilarious.
How do you handle that? How do you handle that, and how do you integrate that with your work environment? I also saw that you actually have been an evangelist before, right? Where I think being more public is more of your role. Is that still something that's part of your job description at CodePen, or is that really something that you say it's all in my free time?
Yeah. So speaking at conferences and meetups and hackathons and stuff, that used to be part of my job. And I loved it. And I still do love it. Speaking at events is a really good time, because you kind of get to see that aha moment when developers finally understand how something works, and both to entertain and to inform. It's really, really fun to do that. And I kind of moved away from it being a part of my job for a while, mostly because it was really just kind of life consuming. I was traveling a lot on weekends. I was speaking constantly. When I was really kind of in, I don't want to say my heyday because I sound so ancient, but kind of when I was really in the heyday of speaking regularly, there were some points where I was speaking every single day for 2 weeks straight, both on the weekends and on the weekdays. And I was just burning out constantly. And it was rough, because I was doing it because I liked it, but I was also kind of obligated to do it because it was a part of my job. And so now, because it's not as much part of my job, I'm able to speak at events that I want to speak at, not just because the company wants me to speak at them. And, I'm able to still like kind of plug CodePen because I work there and stuff. So it's advantageous for the company, but also I'm able to kind of do it on my own time and determine my schedule, where instead of speaking every other week and traveling every other week to a conference, I travel maybe 3 or 4 times a year for a conference and speak more locally and kind of have a little bit more balance in that regard. And then with regards to side projects that are not speaking or being silly with jokes or something, like the keyboards and just coding projects and stuff in general, that's something that I just really love. I love being able to build things, and that's kind of why I like coding and why I chose this profession to begin with. I love being able to build things with my brain, with my hands, and in general. And I've said many times, if I were to ever retire from software engineering, I'd love to be some kind of woodworker, carpenter, and just build things. I love it. And so I kind of got into keyboards. And anyone who follows me on Twitter will know that I am into mechanical keyboards and probably talk about them too much. I got into them when I was living in New York, but I didn't really have time to experiment with them much. I was more just learning a lot and watching from the sidelines, saying, yeah, keyboards are cool, maybe someday. And then when I moved to Seattle, I dove in deep. And it turns out the community here in Seattle is one of the biggest in the world, actually. And it's a blast. And these sorts of things, they are they seem silly, but they're really important to me because I'm able to kind of give back to communities and also kind of just exercise some creativity and do things that I'm interested in. And I love being able to mess around with my keyboards. I'm looking at them now as I speak. There's memories attached to them. As I built certain keyboards, I was at a certain time in my life. There's stories attached to each one of my keyboards, and it's fun because I get to build something. It's creative. I get to make it aesthetically pleasing, but it's also functional. I get to actually use these things in my work and get pleasure out of typing with a different type of switch when I switch around with them and program the electronics to do exactly what I want, where I can add my own little macros and functions and stuff into my boards. And so that's a kind of where the keyboards come from. But in general, for side projects and having the freedom to work on things, it kind of all comes down to I love being able to build and be creative and work on things. And luckily, with the flexibility of my remote job and just my company in general, and kind of the way I've set up how I want to work and how I want to play, for lack of a better word, I've been really blessed to have the opportunity and the privilege to have that flexibility in my work-life balance and just in what I want to do. And what I would say to anyone out there who is still listening to me ramble, if you're interested in some kind of side project or some kind of thing, kind of try to figure out why. I was really building side projects initially because I was like, oh, if I have a lot of these, it'll help me climb the career ladder. And now that I'm at a point in my job where I'm very content with where I am in my career, I don't need to be a CEO. I'm very happy being a developer, doing developer things and coding. I build side projects because I genuinely get enjoyment out of them. And so I work on side projects not because they're good for my career, but because I'm genuinely interested in a certain type of technology or in learning a certain thing or in just being creative with something. And kind of getting to that point was a weird transition for me. I guess that's what maturity is, being able to determine what you're working for with purpose rather than just kind of trying to get to the next big thing. And so between building keyboards, learning how to laser cut, messing with different technologies, even trying out game development, just a bunch of fun things that I really like to experiment with, between all of these different things, that's really how I've made time for those things, because I care about those things. And I've set up myself at work so that way I can make time for those things. And there was this song that came out, I forget when it came out, but I know that it was in a very obscure movie that some people love, some people have never heard of, some people didn't like, called Prairie Home Companion, based on the radio show. And the song lyrics that really stuck with me, it's a song called "The Day Is Short." The chorus is, "The day is short, the night is long. Why do we work so hard to get something that we don't even want?" And those lyrics, when I heard those, that really stuck with me. I want to work for something that I want to do. I want to work for something so that way I can have the flexibility at work to have kids someday and be at a place where I can be spoon feeding my kid and also talking about advanced technical topics. I want to be at a job where I can work on a bunch of different interesting hobbies and things that are just interesting to me and fun to me without having to stress out about getting my job done for someone else at a company. And I'm getting closer and closer to that goal of having all of that flexibility. And it's really exciting. And I think to all those out there, figure out what you do want and figure out what you are working towards, not just to have that certain position so that way you can say, yay, I've made it, but figure out what really does make you happy, what really does motivate you to get up in the morning and to do your job, and how can you tailor your career experience to work towards that, so that way you can really just not only enjoy your job, but also enjoy the things outside of your job too, and know that your worth is not just in your work, but in your whole self, and bring your whole self to work and have that ability to bring your whole self to work, and also be able to be your whole self outside of work and not constantly be stressed about what's going on at the office. This kind of turned into a really big philosophical ramble, but that's I hope that generally answered your question.
Yeah, it answers my question. I think I can relate to so many things that you said. I think it's really this drive that you have for projects or for things that just give you fulfillment, that give you joy, that you value, that you just really like to do. Mm-hmm. But I also think that even having this as an end goal or as a goal is already too much. Just try out some stuff. You know, have a project, have a side project. And then if you figure out, actually, that's not for me, you can drop it. And it's mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah, it's good to experiment with your life.
Exactly. Yeah, it's good. And don't be afraid, because you're not sure if it will stick. Mm-hmm. It will show itself if it sticks or not. And I think the most important thing is to get over that fear of trying out the different things. Try it out and see. And then also be relentless with just letting it go again. It's okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You tried, for example, I don't know, blogging, or you tried public speaking and you figure out it's not for me. Yeah. Move on to something else and try it out. And I think we cannot know before we tried it or, you know, we experienced it.
Yeah, there's a gal, Rebecca Garcia, and she gave a really good talk once that stuck with me. And she said, when you're building not only your personal brand, but just also like your career for yourself, it's just as important to know what you like as it is to know what you don't like. And sometimes it can be as simple as, for example, I loathe C++. That language has broken me. I do not like it. And so I avoid all projects and all jobs that would involve me getting close to C++. That's just me. I'm not saying everybody should dislike it. That's just who I am. And I think that having that list, whether it be as simple as a programming language or as big as, I don't even know, just a type of work that you want to do. Let's just say you dislike consulting, or you love consulting and you yeah. dislike product work, something like that. It's good to think about that and be aware of that so that you can be fulfilled in your career and not just work for the paycheck so much. And it's okay to work for the paycheck, but you might as well try to have some fun while you do so.
I think you can optimize that by little steps. And I think that's the most important thing, that you have this, maybe this bigger goal, and maybe you don't even know exactly what your goal is, but just observing your surrounding and thinking, what little thing can I improve today to, you know, make it much more enjoyable for me?
Right.
I think that's the right approach, just, you know, tweaking it a little bit. And then over the time, it's this compound effect that you're actually seeing you're in a place that's much more enjoyable than a year before, for example.
Right, exactly. Those little tweaks really do matter. And especially when just life is rough, there's so many crazy things happening in the political world right now and on social media right now. There's so many things. It's good to kind of figure out how you can improve your life or your work or something just a little bit incrementally over time, yeah. just to kind of maintain sanity, maintain your ability to get up and go to work in the morning without being too stressed about it and without just completely disliking what you do. I think that's exactly. that's a really important thing.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree as well. And I think that's a really good end for us for this podcast. I'm so happy that you have been on my show, Cassidy. Thank you so much. It was really a good talk with you. Many insights into your work with CodePen, but also how your brain works, what you enjoy, your side projects. And yeah, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for
your time.
Me. Yeah, this was a fun
yeah,
time.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed another episode of the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. Bye.